Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, everyone. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, we are always really, really happy to be able to be with you live and in living color. All right. We're going to start tonight off with none other than the great Fannie Lou Hamer, because a few days ago was, in fact, Fannie Lou Hamer Day. So with that said, let's kick it off. Okay, hopefully it'll queue up in a few minutes here. We're trying. Here we go.
Mr. Chairman, and to the Provincial Committee, my name is Mrs. Fannie Lou Hamer, and I live at 626 East Lafayette Street, Louisville, Mississippi. Sunflower County is the home of Senator James O. Easton and Senator Spence. It was the 31st of August of 1962 that 18 of us traveled 26 miles to the county courthouse in Indianola to try to register to become first-class citizens. We was met in Indianola by policemen, highway patrolmen, and they only allowed two of us in to take the literacy test at the time. After we had taken this test and started back to Louisville, we were held up by the city police and the state highway patrolmen and carried back to Indianola, where the bus driver was charged that day with driving a bus the wrong color. After we paid the fine among us, we continued on to Louisville, and Reverend Jeff Sonny carried me 4 miles in the rural area where I had worked as a timekeeper and sharecropper for 18 years. I was met there by my children, who told me the plantation owner was angry because I had gone down, tried to register. After they told me, my husband came and said the plantation owner was raising cane because I had tried to register. And before he quit talking, the plantation owner came and said, "Fannie Lou, do you know the cop tell you what I said?" And I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Well, I mean that. He said, if you don't go down and withdraw your registration, you will have to leave. But then if you go down and withdraw, but you still might have to go because we are not ready for that in Mississippi." And I addressed him and told him, "I didn't try to register for you. I tried to register for myself. I had to leave that same night on the 10th of September, 1962.
Yep,
16 bullets were fired into the home of Mr. and Mrs. Robert Tucker for me. That same night, two girls were shot in Louisville, Mississippi. Also, Mr. Joe McDonald's house was shot in.
Okay,
June the 9th, 1963, I had attended a voter registration workshop, was returning back to Mississippi. 10 of us was traveling by the Cotton Little Trailway bus. When we got to Winona, Mississippi, which is Montgomery County, 4 of the people got us to use the washroom. And 2 of the people used the restaurant. 2 of the people wanted to use the washroom. The 4 people that had gone in to use the restaurant was ordered out during this time I was on the bus. And when I looked through the window and saw they had rushed out, I got off the bus to see what had happened. And one of the ladies said it was a state highway patrolman and a chief of police ordered us out. I got back on the bus, and one of the persons who had used the washroom got back on the bus too. As soon as I was seated on the bus, I saw when they began to get the five people in a highway patrolman's car. I stepped off of the bus to see what was happening, and somebody screamed from the car, fire workers was in, and said, get that one there. And when I went to get in the car, when the man told me I was under arrest, he kicked me. I was carried to the county jail and put in the booking room. They left some of the people in the booking room and began to place us in cells. I was placed in a cell with a young woman called Miss Sylvester Simpson. After I was placed in the cell, I began to hear sounds of lips and screams. I could hear the sounds of licks and harvest screams. And I could hear somebody say, can you say yes, sir, nigga? Can you say yes, sir? And they would say other horrible names. He would say, yes, I can say yes, sir. Say it. He said, I don't know you well enough. They beat her I don't know how long. And after a while, she began to pray and asked God to have mercy on those people. And it wasn't too long before three white men came to my cell. One of these men was a state highway patrolman. He asked me where I was from. And I told him he was there. He said, we're going to check this. And they left my cell, and it wasn't too long before they came back. He said, you are from Louisville, all right, and he used the test word. And he said, we're going to make you wish you was dead. I was carried out of that cell into another cell where they had two Negro children. The state highway patrolman ordered the first Negro to take the blackjack. The first Negro children ordered me, by order from the state highway patrolman, for me to lay down on a bunk bed on my face. And I laid on my face, the first Negro began to beat. And I was beat by the first Negro until he was exhausted. I was holding my hands behind me at that time on the left side because I suffered from polio when I was 6 years old. After the first Negro had beat until he was exhausted, the state highway patrolman ordered the second Negro to take the blackjack. The second Negro began to beat, and I began to work my feet. And the state highway patrolman ordered the first Negro had beat to sit on my feet. To keep me from working my feet. I began to scream, and one white man got up and began to beat me in my head and tell me to hurt. One white man, my breast had worked up high. He walked over and pulled my breast. I pulled my breast down, and he pulled my breast back up. I was in jail when Matthew Evers was murdered. All of this was just on account of we want to register to become first-class citizens. And if the Freedom Democratic Party is not seated now, I question America. Is this America, the land of the free and the home of the brave, where we have to speak with our telephones off of the hook because our lives be threatened daily? Because we want to live as decent human beings in America. Thank you.
All right. As you can tell, as you can hear, Fannie Lou Hamer, for those who are not familiar with her or was not familiar with her, well, now you are. And so with that said, family, we are making sure that people know that we appreciate our people who stood up for us over these couple of centuries, actually. And with that said, we're making certain that we uphold and continue their work. And so, of course, again, the great Fannie Lou Hamer is one of our Million Woman March Universal Sister Saints. Yes, indeed. She's going to be installed with us as saint. Oh, hold on one moment. I hope I didn't. Oh, there we go. Okay. Yep. St. Fannie Lou Hamer. And so with that said, we're going to share some of the initiatives that we've developed over the past few years in honoring of her. But before we do, I see that Sister Janae is in the queue. There's an event coming up tomorrow, family, and I'm going to be sending it out again tonight for those who might have forgotten or did not receive it. If you are in the D.C. area, certainly you need to stop by and check it out. This is one of several monthly events that's going to be coming. We're kicking it off in D.C. We plan to take this and other kinds of activities as we prepare now for the Million Woman World March. Sister Janae, can you share with us briefly tomorrow?
Yes, we are excited. The Million Woman World March, Washington, D.C. Hosting Committee. We are sponsoring a Sunday brunch tomorrow, starting at 3 p.m. at Premier Lounge, which is located at 7307 Georgia Avenue. We've invited several ladies out from the teen shelter to come. We've invited ladies in the community to come and just get registered for the Million Woman World March. And we're offering a head wrapping class, you know, how to wrap your hair with the different scarves and things like that, health and wellness. We have gifts. If you bring a friend, you get a gift bag. If you come, you're going to get a gift bag. But we encourage you to come and get registered for the Million Woman World March in Washington, D.C. Sign up for the committee. Come, just come bring your time, your talents, and your gifts into the Washington, D.C. metro area. We are just excited to be a part of this. We partnered with several other small or grassroots organizations that are going to be attending this meeting. So if you're in the D.C. area, Washington, D.C., Virginia, Maryland, that's what we call the DMV, just come on by Georgia Avenue. We're closer to Silver Springs. If you don't know which end of Georgia Avenue, go towards Silver Springs, almost to Maryland. So we're right there at the Maryland and D.C. line on going towards Virginia. It's Premier Lounge. It's a little small lounge. I'm the manager, co-manager of the lounge, myself and my entertainment business, Boss Up Entertainment and Playtime Entertainment. We host Friday nights there. Friday and Saturday night. So if you're looking for somewhere to come and party with a band, we have a band on Saturday, Friday night, as well as Saturday open. So please come, enjoy us, bring a friend, bring a sister, invite a stranger, invite a homeless person. We will have care packages for homeless people. We'll probably be outside if the weather's nice. We'll be outside in front of the lounge passing out the bags to the passerbys and inviting them to come in to register for the Million Woman World March. So we just thank you so much, Empress Soleil, for your vision for the Million Woman World March. We thank all of those that are involved around the world that are coming to Washington, D.C. This is the city where you can do that at, okay? We look forward to seeing you soon. I'm excited. I'm making gift bags right now. Now, you know I love to give away free stuff. Come on.
All right. And Sister Janae, before you leave, I know you had a hectic day today. Once again, you was out in the field with boots on the ground. Just tell us a little bit about how your day went today with servicing our people there in D.C.
Okay. Well, today with the Rosh Hashanah Community Center, as well as the street code, Brother Kokaya, Dr. Kokaya Patterson, and Imam Ali here in Washington, D.C. We went out and we served the people. It was a last-minute thing for me, but the good part is I didn't have to cook all the food this time. But the food was already prepared, but we went out and served about 150 people today. Nice, healthy, halal food. We only serve halal chicken and meats and things like that. We gave them chicken, not just fried chicken, brown soup chicken, rice, vegetables, chickpeas, a nice homemade salad. The salad was so good, y'all.
Yes.
Salad, and we also had spaghetti and breadsticks as well for the people. And Dr. Kakai and his street team, they treat the people that with addictions, they treat them with acupuncture.
All right.
So we heal the people. And this is with the Imam Abu Jamil Action Network.
Yeah.
So we're bringing awareness to what's going on with our political prisoners. You know, we're doing it here in Washington. We are doing the work. We are truly doing the work. Brother Pete was there. He can share a little bit about his experience. He came and helped us out. But we always serve the people. We give them care packages. We love on them. We joke with them. We make them smile and laugh. And that's just, you know, that's the best we can do for our people because they're so broken. Like,
right.
They are literally broken here in Washington, D.C. And they need some kind of sunshine in their life. It was a beautiful day in Washington, D.C. I can't believe I accomplished so much because I'm so tired. But I did. I was running all day long, but I just all praise due to the Most High Allah for giving me the strength to keep going. You know, when I'm down, I'm down, but when I'm up, I'm running full speed ahead, y'all.
I know that's
all
right.
Power to the people.
Ashe. Thank you, my sister. All right, before we get into tonight's dialogue with Sister Tawanda Jones, is going to be joining us very, very shortly. And also we're going to hear from Dr. Truth Bay, who has been up in New York for the CSW sessions. Excuse me, and she's going to give us a brief report and also a commentary on what's going on in IET right now. Now, going back to the great Fannie Lou Hamer, again, it is our pleasure to announce, of course, as I mentioned earlier, we're saying Saint Fannie Lou Hamer, because for the Million Woman March Universal Movement, we have now our own pantheon. And what does that mean? That means we're selecting who we want to honor, uphold, and so forth. And so Saint Fannie Lou Hamer is one of them, along with Saint Harriet Tubman, Saint Ida B. Wells, Saint Yasantawa. We have 25 right now, and it will grow. Now, very soon, you'll be able to get the poster or posters of our sister saints, along with some of our educational materials, particularly for the children, so they can definitely know more about these great black women. Now, I'm going to tell you, I've done a lot of research, and I'm looking forward to doing more to really begin to know more about our women. Oh, my gosh. I mean, it's so much that I'm learning. For example, and I'm digressing for a moment, but check this out. So who was the first, let's say, recognized millionaire black woman in the U.S.? You can open up your mic real quick and tell me. Who don't be looking it up either. Who was the first black woman millionaire? Self-made. Come on, y'all.
Madam C.J.?
Aha, that's what I thought too. But nope.
Oh.
Nope.
Ah.
She was not the first one. And that's why I'm like, wow. You know, even when you think you know, you don't know. Right? So, yeah, there's another sister. And wait till you hear about her. Oh, she was off the hook. I never heard about her. I'm going to tell you about that later, though. But there's also another one prior even to Madam C.J. Walker. So the person that I'm going to tell you about later, I'm going to hold that for now. But even before Madam C.J. Walker, there was one. And interestingly enough, she was the one that taught Madam C.J. Walker. Anyone familiar with Annie Malone? Aha. Again, see, this is why MWWM is creating our own National Black Women's History and Legacy Project, but also our Global African Women's History Curriculum and Study Guide. So these are some of the projects and some of the initiatives that you'll literally see unfold right before your eyes come October when we bring forward the Million Woman World March. So again, this is more than a march for sure. It is indeed a movement with, I mean, it's such a vast area of things in terms of justice, equality, et cetera, for our women and girls in particular, but also a better quality of life for our people, for our families and communities. So I'm going to tell you more about that a little later on. But in terms of the great Saint Fannie Lou Hamer, before I disclose more about the projects that we have in regards to her, we're going to hear just a few more words from Fannie Lou Hamer. Hold on one moment. Let me cue this up again. Bear with me. Hey, Sister Manera, I see you there. How are you this evening? Okay, there we go. All right, we're going to queue up again.
All is well. How's everybody?
All right, all right. Brother Ray Ray in the house. Greetings, Brother Ray Ray. Okay, let's hear just a few more words from the great Fannie Lou Hamer. Saint Fannie Lou.
Thank you very much, Martha Smith. I don't know whether I'll have to holler or not because I'm just used to talking loud. So I don't have too much trouble having to carry my voice. But with this kind of introduction, Martha Smith is a very good friend of mine. I remember going on educational television with Martha about 2 years ago here at the university in Wisconsin. And honest to God, I just almost took on me to death. You know, I had all kinds of trouble. But she just brought all that out, and for a while I could relax just doing this show with Martha Smith. I would like to say this is a beautiful audience out here to me this afternoon because I always like people. A couple of weeks ago, I was doing a show in New York City at the NBC in the role of a black woman. And somebody asked a question during the time he was on the panel. How did I feel talking to a lot of people? I said, I feel like I always feel because I know out there in front of me in just a moment. So I don't have to worry about it. So just in front of the people. Now, you might be expecting me to have a long essay. But I would have to use my glasses every 5 minutes to miss grammar. But I don't have a manuscript because it's too much to talk. I'm just up here to rap and to tell you what it is and to tell it back to you. As Martha said, I was born 53 years ago in Montgomery County. Now, Mississippi, you heard about this question the other week, but it was already a disaster area for those countries. And it's been a disaster area 53 years. I know when people all of you said it was a disaster area for 4 weeks. Now, I was born 53 years ago to Mr. and Mrs. Jim Town. And I am the 20th child. And so help me God, I respect my mother so much that they didn't have the birth control still. Because if they had happened, I probably wouldn't be standing here today. So as I made that narrow escape to be here, I fight for the other kids too to give them a chance. Because if you give them a chance, they might come up being Fannie Lou Hamer or something else. But during the time I was a child, my education was very limited. So I had to start work when I was 6 years old. I remember one day I was playing beside a gravel road. And the landowner asked me if I was retired. And I told him I didn't know. And he told me he wanted me to go to the field that week. hunger is about. My father and mother finally got enough money out of one spot to buy some livestock when I was about 13 years old. And a man went to our lot one night, and he wasn't black, and he came down and got on a pair of boots and stood up in our livestock boots and killed everything he had. At that point, my parents had bought 3 new cows. Y'all up there in Henry with the news, and Maul and Bella with the 2 cows. And they killed everything that we had. I used to watch my mother when she would come out of the field, and she would have a big bundle of things by her side, and she would mend our clothes over and over. And I watched her when she would wear things that was so heavy. After he had mended them time after time, looked like she would have trouble carrying. At first, I couldn't understand why this just always happened to black people. So I asked my mother one day, how come we wasn't white? The reason I asked her that, because we were all the time. The white folks never, and they had it. Now this was really curious. As it still is. So my mother told me, number one, she wants me to remember to respect myself as a black child. And I was like, and she said, baby, you don't understand what I'm talking about now. But one day, if you respect yourself, other people will have to respect you. My grandmother was a slave. Liza Brandon, Liza Gopher Brandon. She had 20 boys and 3 girls. And I know what has happened to us in the past. But after I returned around 13 years old and found out how mean the people could be to people, I said that I was going to do something about what was happening in this city. That I become involved in politics in 1964. But it had been other things in my life that I had done that some of the white people don't know that I've done yet. Because number one, I always had to work at their house. So they would tell me that I couldn't eat with them, or I couldn't bath in their tub. So what I would do was eat before they would eat and bath when they were gone. I used to have a real ball, knowing they didn't want me in that tub and just relaxing in that bowl. Of course, everything they put on there, the door and they put
All right. So you heard right there for yourself, Fannie Lou Hamer. Wow. I mean, again, for those who are not familiar with her, then certainly to hear her words so clear, so profound, certainly we must keep this sister's legacy moving on. Now, family, listen, it just so happened that I just got a call from Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., and so I'm going to, let me see, I'm not sure if this is the person that he wanted to, he had a special report, and so let me just check for one moment. There's something that just came up in Chicago or something that he really wanted to share with you, and so I'm going to hit him up real quick just to kind of see if we can bring him in. Okay, give me 1 minute. In fact, let's do this while we're waiting. I'm going to call Chairman Fred right now so that I can see if we can patch him in very quickly. So in the meantime, family, give me a minute. I'm just going to play something, again, tribute to Fannie Lou Hamer. This is Sweet Honey in the Rock.
Fannie Lou Hamer. She rocked the state of Mississippi. Now a few more black people stand there.
Fannie Lou Hamer. Fannie Lou Hamer. Down on a white man's farm. He received threats on her life, was fired from her job, scorned and kicked off the farm.
Being sick and tired, that's what the lady would yell. Her body was beaten and she walked crippled, trying to vote. She was thrown in jail.
Fannie
they march to their lives in their hands.
Fannie Lou Hamer.
She came by here and she didn't stay long. Helped to turn a few things around. Cancer took a body, but the struggle got a soul. Now we lay the body in the ground.
Ashe, Ashe, Asheo. All right. What happened to the songs that we used to have that used to tell these stories like that? Fannie Lou Hamer. Wow. So her transition date was March 14th, 1977. As you just heard in Sweet Honey in the Rock, Fannie Lou Hamer's song, she died of cancer. Needless to say, she had a lot of other ailments, some of them, of course, caused by beatings. She was incarcerated, put in jail, and beat severely. That was just one time that she was beaten. And so, again, family, we've got to really remember that, you know, our people have gone through so much, least we forget. Okay, I see Dr. Truth Bay is in queue, and Chairman Fred is going to have someone to call in shortly to provide a special report. So while we're waiting for that, we are going to now talk with Sister Dr. Truth Bay and just get a brief overview of what she was able to engage in while in New York this past week up for the CSW 68. You know, we've been talking about it over the past few months, and so she had the opportunity to literally go up and experience it. And we're going to be there, of course, on Tuesday, where we will now do a prayer vigil, also a media briefing, and make a special announcement because we had to change some things up because a lot's going on. And we're really raising the question in the bar, and it is, as so many are focusing on Gaza and what's going on in that area, there's a lot going on in Congo, as also Sudan, and of course, Haiti. And since this is Women's History Month, we're saying to Black women, we need to make some clear statements about what's happening with our women and girls in these countries. Now, of course, here in the U.S., we're going to be launching a major campaign starting on May the 8th, I think it is. I've got to check that date. But it's a national campaign for the elimination of all forms of violence and abuse of our women and girls. We kick it off officially here in Philly. And then as a part of the Million Women World March, we're looking to do chapters and other kinds of programs that will go nationwide from that point on. We're also in the preparation of talking with or scheduling a meeting with the governor of California because California already has an ebony alert. Now, we've been working on that for 5 years, but ours is called the Amber Ebony Alert because one of our official operational tools or apparatuses is A Million Black Women Rising. And so when you use the letters for that, It spells out to be Amber, but not, you know, like the white folks, Amber. It's A-M-B-R-W. Anyway, so the point is, in California, they already have a something in place where there's a notification when there's someone missing that is of African descent. Well, we've been doing it on our own with just using text and email every time we get a report. So now, with the Million Women World March, we are planning to take it to the next level and begin to search for hopefully one of our people to develop an app that we will be able to have nationwide so that particularly our women and girls, when they are reported missing, it'll immediately pop up on your phone or you know, some other kind of communications or media outlet. So we'll tell you more about that, but we're going to make that announcement on Tuesday in addition to something else that we just decided we have to do now. Now, we were already talking about raising the issue of what's going on with our women and girls in Congo, Sudan, and Haiti, the rape of our women and girls and the brutality of our women and girls, our people as a whole. But again, this is Women's History Month. So we're going to take this opportunity to highlight something that most are saying nothing about, and that is the rape and other kinds of horrible, horrible things that are happening to our women and girls in these countries. And that as Black women, and we'll tell you more about that shortly, but for right now, I want to bring in Dr. Truth Bay. Dr. Truth Bay, hold on one moment. I'm going to open up your mic in a minute. Bear with me. All right, here we go. And we are going to hear what our sister, some of what she was able to participate in and bear witness to, but also we want to hear her thoughts about what's going on in Haiti right now. Greetings, Sister Dr. Truth Bay. How are you this evening?
All right. Peace and power, sis. Give thanks. Thank you so much for having me on your platform today. And, yeah, a lot has transpired. So we been in New York. I've been in New York since the 10th and attended the CSW 68, which the theme for this year is accelerating the achievement of gender equality and empowerment of all women and girls, and is by addressing poverty, strengthening institutions, and financing a gender perspective. So that's this year's theme for the Commission of the Status of Women, and it's been wonderful. It's been hundreds of workshops, and the second week coming up, starting on the 18th and completed on the 22nd. But the first week, we made quite a few connections, attended most of the parallel sessions. The parallel sessions were very powerful. I can say that Africa has showed up tenfold, has so strong. A lot of women from Nigeria, Senegal, as well, giving speeches and workshops concerning land, employment, advocacy specifically for the African countries who's experiencing a high of rape and gender inequality. So it's a great event to connect with women from around the world that is going through a lot of the issues that we are dealing here in America. So I look forward to CSW 69 and really seeing how we can dominate that platform. So I'm enjoying it so much. But I don't see too many representatives from Haiti. That's one thing that I've seen. And also Black American women, surprising enough. A lot of the countries represented is Indonesia, India, China, yep, and Africa.
That's right.
So
as you know, Dr. Truth, when I was holding those sessions over the past weeks leading up to now, that's what I was really saying, that the representation of Black women, women of African descent, who are based in the U.S. is little to none. And this is why, you know, I was hoping these sessions for the sisters to get them acclimated and ready so that next year we literally are going to be up in there strong and ready to roll.
That's right. That's right. And it's much, much needed. So we definitely want everyone to at least come out on this Tuesday, March 19th, where we'll be highlighting press conference concerning these issues as well. So we look forward to that, and we'd love for you to come and join us at the UN Plaza, 777 United Nations Plaza, where we will be addressing these very issues concerning African-American women here that is not strongly represented in this forum. So we hope to change the scope. Now, as far as Haiti is concerned, we definitely have some challenges going through right now with no governance currently past March, I believe March 11th. Ariel Henry, the acting president, the selected acting president, resigned. The Haitian people have gotten enough of the inconsistencies when it comes to support. And as you heard in news, I'm sure you've heard a lot about Jimmy Cherizier, who was the former state national police that quit a couple of years ago to become a freedom fighter. And he's actually leading the charge in revolution for the people of Haiti. So it really is seemingly adding to or moving towards some sort of, I wouldn't say a civil war, but it seems like it's going to be leading to that. Currently, the update with CARICOM, CARICOM has been the lead in so-called advocating for a structured governance for Haiti. But again, a lot of the Haitians feel that they're not being brought to the table. So CARICOM's suggestions may be disingenuous moving forward. So we're seeing that right now, actively, there are certain administrations that's trying to reach out to Jimmy Cherizier. Basically, what the Haitian people would like is there's three people that they have highlighted with the experience of Haiti's government in the past, and they would like to at least have a three-member council with these three gentlemen, which one of them we just mentioned, Jimmy Cherizier. The other one is Guy Philippe. And the third is Moïse, Jean-Charles Moïse. And each of them in their own right had some type of experience in the Haitian government. Guy Philippe was part of the 2004 coup in from Jean-Bertrand Aristide. He also was detained by the U.S. and recently released in October. And when he was released in October, he went back to Haiti and actually made amends with Jean-Maurice Charles and Jimmy Cherizier. So these three, with the proper guidance and the right plan of strategy, they will be the ideal leadership for the country of Haiti. And what we're looking to also have, because we don't have a parliament, there's 149 seats that needs to be filled. So we have, I'm being optimistic in the next 6 months that we have a clear plan of action for the structure of Haiti's governance. And Ariel Henry, unfortunately, he's a bought puppet, and the people of Haiti, you know, stood up and said, you know, he's not to return to the country after he did a deal with the Kenyan troops to send over there. And currently the Kenyan troop deal has been paused, but still there have been troops that have been sent to Haiti as we speak. So it's not looking good right now with the ongoing terrorists in the street, but we must be very mindful on what we're seeing in the news. I can tell you right now, 99.9% of what you hear about Haiti in the mainstream media is inaccurate. It's more of trying to portray Haiti as a war-torn country of disorder, when actually it's the opposite. The Haitian leaders, as we mentioned, needs to be highlighted with support from the U.S. in a way that involves the Haitians, and that has not happened since its inception, since 1804. So now that we are 2024, we have yet to see that change. But I can guarantee you that there is a different air with the people of Haiti that are banding together to really demand justice and return of their sovereign country. And so that's where we are right now with Haiti News. And we'll actually give you more updates on Black Power Radio, in which we'll hopefully be able to interview you, Sister FSG, on Monday, March 18th. And then we'll also give some updates on Sunday, March 17th as well.
All right. Wonderful, wonderful. And again, family, the CSW, which stands for the Commission on the Status of Women, We'll continue starting on Monday. It's a two-week session, basically. And again, as Dr. Truth mentioned, women come in from all over the world. They've been doing this at the UN for at least, I think, 68 years. This is the 68th session. And so, again, it's all women, needless to say, because it's the United Nations. But as Dr. Truth just said, a lot of the sisters come in from the diaspora. This is the only time that a lot of them are able to travel for whatever reason. And so, again, the representation of black women from the U.S. is just not there. But we're going to change that starting next year. Now, we have a session tomorrow for those who are interested. Starting at 6 o'clock, I believe it is, because we did begin formulating our commission on the status of African women and also the United Nations of African Women, or the African Women United Nations, whatever you prefer. So tomorrow we're going to meet and start mapping out strategy for the session that we are now getting ready to, when we announce on Tuesday. We're talking about something that's now very, very, we feel is dynamic and very, very important, because we as African women or women of African descent must begin to make some clear statements. So we're starting our Sisters Supporting Sisters mission and expedition, and it is going to be a holistic relief for women and girls in Congo, Sudan, and Haiti. So when we go up to the United Nations on Tuesday, we will take with us or bring with us letters that will go to those embassies. Well, for New York, it's the consulates. And we'll also prepare for the letters that will go to the embassies, requesting meetings with those embassies so that we can begin to find out how can our women here and our people who are interested, but particularly our women, what do we need to do to be of greater assistance to our women and girls in Sudan, Haiti, and Congo? We want to know, what can we do? Now, for those who don't know, we definitely got a plan for the U.S. That's a major, major thing that we're getting ready to launch called hashtag Just Us. But at the same time, there's some crises right now that needs to be addressed. And our position is, if folks can talk about what's going on in other countries, so should we. And particularly African countries or African people. So again, you know, we've got to begin to show a level of equity here, and we're going to do that. So on Tuesday at 12 o'clock noon, there will be a media briefing. We're going to do a prayer vigil because we want to make sure that it's understood by these governments that we come in peace. That's very important that, you know, when you start doing these types of things. And so we will also share other information about how we plan to proceed on an international level when it comes to the Million Women World March 2024. And then Million Women World March 2025, because we do plan to take it into Africa. So those are some of the projections for now. And Dr. Trube, is there anything else you want to share with us before that with you?
Actually, we just want everyone to support the Million Women World movement. This is very important that we have all hands on deck. This is the year that we must come together in a different way to represent black women, especially missing girls, missing women, women with children, homelessness, unemployment. There's so many things that women, especially black women, have to deal with without support. So this year we're making a mark to really highlight these issues and come with solutions. So from this year on in 2025, we'll be in a productive state. So I really do appreciate, again, this platform and the work that you're doing. And it's very imperative for everyone to be on board. Men as well, very important to support and be there and support our women. So we just say thank you again. And we hope that everyone will be
cooperative and productive this year. Power to the people.
Ashe, ashe. And remember, family, what we do this year is going to be, I would dare say, not only important but groundbreaking. It's also going to be very strategic. And so what we're talking about is the fact that there is going to be a presidential election in November. And so, and again, that's not anything that we're really advocating for or whatever, but the fact remains is by making this move for the Million Women World March in October, it's going to be an excellent political maneuver. Because, by the way, right now, presently, what we're working on is a national black women's political agenda. So if nothing else, this is why, again, in saluting Fannie Lou Hamer, Saint Fannie Lou Hamer, what would she want us to do? Now, you heard in her own words what she went through, what she was talking about, and so forth and so on. So just based on that, we have to make sure that we uphold what we believe she would want us to do in the 21st century. So if nothing else, because, again, she went to the Democratic Convention. They had their own party, the Democratic Freedom Party. So what are we talking about? Now, again, I know there's some folks are saying, well, you know, we don't need to be bothered with any of that. I'm talking about from a strategic standpoint, not from the standpoint of playing this game with these people the way they be talking about. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about maneuvering the way we need to maneuver with this, not believing in any of this stuff in that manner, but utilizing certain components to maneuver. And we're smart enough to do that. Because, again, St. Fannie Lou Hamer showed us and others. So with that said, black women, let me just say this. I don't know what has happened over these past 20 years because I've watched this very carefully. And what we've been seeing is some strange stuff. When you look at Fannie Lou Hamer, when you look at Ella Baker, when you look at Sister Sada, when you look at, I mean, so many over the past 100 years, we have to ask ourselves, as black women, this is Women's History Month, are we doing the kind of work that our ancestors and our heroes and our great warrior sisters, are we really doing the kind of work that they showed us in this day and age? Have we transformed what they already did into what needs to be done today based on what they already did? And I'm going to say this, the answer is no, because they wasn't waiting for a grant, and they wasn't waiting for corporate sponsoring. And I'm not saying you don't get that, you shouldn't get it, but I'm saying most folks are dependent on that. They won't do much of anything without that. And that's not the spirit of our ancestors or the spirit of our warrior sisters from before. And again, I'm not saying don't get it. I'm saying that just shouldn't be your only avenue. That's what I'm saying. And so MWN is going to prove that. And so with that said, family, I do see Sister Tawanda is in queue. We're going to kind of move into another realm right now because, again, when we talk about warrior sisters, we got to talk about those of today as well. And, again, the kind of work. What are we looking at? Black Lives Matter. Well, yeah, Black Lives always matter. But I'm saying that the kind of energy and the kind of stuff that we see with that, and again, I'm not trying to put anybody down. It's all good. It's all applicable. But at the same time, compared to what? And that's what we're doing. We're saying when you look at the kind of work that our people did in the 50s and the 60s, and yes, I know this is a new time, different day and all of that, but fighting for freedom isn't. And it shouldn't be just limited to, oh, let me get a grant. Because that's pretty much what's going on nationwide. Again, we're going to bring in our sister Tawanda Jones because all across the board for me, she exemplifies in this day and age the spirit of a Harriet Tubman or of a Fannie Lou Hamer, our saints. I think she's going to tell us now, to do West Wednesday, over 550 weeks straight. No grant, no corporate sponsoring, but to make sure that for her brother and for others, and not just in the issue of cops and murderers and government terrorists, but in other realms of injustices. This is what we're talking about. This is why we exemplify our women who stand up in a manner that represents tradition and not just the conversation or the fervor or, you know, the rah-rah stuff. No. We're talking about sisters that got up and got in the streets and not just at a time of a rally here and there or a conference, because that's what we're looking at. But MWWM is going to change that. Isn't that right, Sister Janae? Isn't that right, Dr. Truth? We're going to change all of that come October.
That's right.
Y'all ain't seen nothing yet. All right, because we got our soldiers, our sister soldiers. Anyway. Our sister Tawanda Jones is in queue, and before she tells us about her experience going south, I'm just going to have her to give us some updates on quickly on what's going on with what's going on in B-More, and certainly for those who do not know, we're going to hear a little bit about, you know, West Wednesday. Sister Tawanda, you can unmute yourself. There you go. All right.
Hey, Queen, how are you? How y'all doing?
All right, my sister, finally got you in.
Yes, sir. Lie, because I kept forgetting, because I kept sending you the message saying send me the link, and I'm like, okay, they playing with our phones again. Then I tried to call the radio the regular way, and then they kept saying before, and I'm like, okay. I just thank God you called me.
All right.
How you doing?
I'm good, sis. So what week is coming up for West Wednesday?
Well, we just did a real big one this past West Wednesday. It was called 555 Keep the Movement Alive. So this week will be 556 weeks nonstop. But we just did the 555 Keep the Movement Alive, where we got with different organizations that's in the community, and we all got together. It was real big. It was live. It was like, oh, my goodness.
Right. I saw some clips. So for those who do not know, let's kind of recap for a moment. We're talking about, and so what Sister Tawanda is referring to is, and again, family, consistency is key. This is why I tell people, this is why my patience now is getting very limited, because folks are not, they really are not really as consistent as what I'm used to and was taught and raised up in. So for 555 weeks straight, Sister Tawanda and her crew have been doing something. Now they did it first. For like 400 weeks or whatever it was in the hood, different parts of Baltimore. But then when COVID came, of course, that kind of shut stuff down. So then they did it every week on Facebook or online. But now they're back into the streets, different parts of Baltimore, doing rallies, demonstrations, conversations, providing information every single week. Now, I'm just curious, y'all. In y'all's community, who does that? Who does something every single week in the hoods? Anyway, I already know the answer.
We do.
Okay. So, again, but for most urban or cities that have a lot of black folks, that ain't happening. That's not happening. So, again, this is the kind of tradition that some of us are familiar with and come out of. So again, what Sister Tawanda is talking about is for 555 weeks straight, they've been doing something in remembering her brother who was murdered by the Baltimore cops and the university cops. They killed him. And so the way that she has been inspired and has continued to, again, not only bring attention to what they did to her brother. And by the way, family, this is what I meant when I said some of us, come hell or high water, we are not going to ever stop or ever give up. Because when the system told Tawanda Jones and her family that her brother died by way of some old fake stuff that they made up, heart or some stuff, they accepted it initially, but then Sister Tawanda had the body exhumed and paid her own money, which was thousands of dollars, to have the body shipped or taken, rather, out of state to an independent autopsy, independent doctor, who confirmed that they killed him. You see, no grant, no corporate sponsoring. Anyway, Sister Tawanda, let's move forward. I mean, if you got something to add to that, I'm just, oh, I forgot one thing. No, I forgot one thing. I got to share this. Wait. No. I got to share this one part. So there was a lawsuit, and of course, the family did win the lawsuit. However, the system told the family that as a condition of them getting the money that they was owed any kind of way, but they told the Sister Tawanda and her family that they had to do like kind of like a gag order in order for the deal to be completed, that they would have to stop talking about what happened. And so what Sister Tawanda did was she took her name off of it and made sure that the children, her brother's children, could in fact, you know, receive whatever it was, and her mother, but she took her name off of it. Now, y'all know Negroes ain't going to do that. Y'all know that, right? Anyway. All right, Sister Tawanda. I mean, I just have to tell people because, you know, there's people who are not.
Really need to hear.
Yeah. Go ahead.
This system is dirty. It's real dirty, and it wants you to shut up, and it's a capitalist system, and it wants to pay you money just to be quiet, and it's unfortunately doing this for 10, going on 11 years, and trying to, like, make it, you know, like you know, it's a, we have the coalition, but like you said, I'm not under any 501s because every time you try to do something like that, they want to say, oh, well, you can't testify, and the lab is over. You can get your coalition members to, but you can't. No, they need to hear my voice. Like, that's the same as gagging me. So, you know, that's why I haven't personally did it. And then as far as the money that, like you said, that they owe my family for murdering my brother, you know, I had to take my name off of that. And because our mother is deceased, it would have went to me and his children. But I forfeited my part of the money because you can't pay me enough of money to sell my soul out to just leave my booze and not call out these killer cops and keep calling them out week after week. So that is very important that we not let the system, you know, devour us in such a way that they take the most powerful thing that we have, and that's our voice. So glad you threw it out there. And I was just talking to, like, another sister about that same situation this week. So, yeah, but thank you, sis, for just always being real for what you're doing, too, and have always been doing. And that's why I literally, when I met you at Morgan State, like, we bonded right then and there. Like, we needed to leave. And then, you know, boots on the ground together and things like that. And then I wanted to mention, there's so much happening.
You're starting to break up a little bit.
Can you hear me now?
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, you remember when you met me at West Wednesday when you came up to Baltimore?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So you remember that I had, like, Corinne Gaines' mom there, and then I also had an ex-cop, and his name was, like, Pastor Steve Turner. Remember, I let you meet him, and he had his wife there. And,
yes.
You know, you talk about the Baltimore City Police Department blackballed him, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. So why, literally, sir, So now you can't make this stuff up. Last Saturday, me and him on Facebook, we joking with each other. He's teasing me about my food, this, that, and the third. Then he tagged me in something on Sunday. And as soon as he tagged me in a post on Sunday, because his wife had wound up passing away like almost 2 years ago, but he always highlighted her or whatever because he's like in the ministry and all that. But long story short, please tell me why he just dropped dead. Like, I'm tired of my folks dropping dead. That's what I call it. Like, not to be disrespectful to his family, but it's just so sad, like, how so many community leaders, I don't know what's going on now other places, but in Baltimore, and I hate to sound like a conspiracy theory, but every, like, there's so many community big faces that's been doing stuff that's unfiltered, telling the truth. They just dropping like flies. And it's disgusting. And they said that he literally, and I couldn't believe what I saw literally at midnight. Like, I saw the news, like, on Tuesday. And I was like, you got to be kidding me. And they talking about rest and peace. I'm like, what? We were just talking, literally. Like, Monday, he tagged me or something, and now he's gone. Like, so it's real here. It's really real here. And it's a lot. It was so many, like, and it was another beautiful queen, her name is Maybelle. She was giving back to, like, the homeless. She had a big event set for the 18th of this month. And she just straight up died. Like, it's, and you can keep hearing this just over and over. It's like Facebook and social media is turning into obituaries. You're just reading about people that you know just passing away, and it's horrible. But I wanted to share that part.
Wow, wow. You know, again, what we're telling people is that, of course, death is inevitable, but there's something really interesting going on in our communities, and we need to start paying closer attention to certain things. There's something in the air, for example. I think most folks realize there's something different in the air. There's definitely something different going on with the food. I love fruit, but I can tell you, and I'm really like a fruit connoisseur, but for whatever reason, the majority of the fruit that we now get, it's like horrible. And I'm talking about even the organic stuff. It's horrible. Actually horrible. It tastes like nothing almost, some of it. You know? So there's definitely something going on. So we're going to talk more about that as we proceed, because it's going to be even more and more important that we start growing our own food. And that is going to be a priority with the Million Woman World March. So we'll talk more about that. But let's fast forward for a moment, Sister Tawanda. You just had a trip, and it sounded like it was a trip. Tell us a little bit about what just happened when you took your daughter to an event. Uh-oh, where you at? We can't hear you. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you now.
Yeah, it's weird how they do technology, because now it's like you was fading. No, but yeah, you were talking about the event that I just recently took my daughter to.
Right.
Yeah, I want to make sure y'all hear me loud and clear. Yeah, it was, so it felt like I was going on a trip back into time, because we do know that we have a lot of racism. That's nothing new, all the prejudice stuff that happens daily. But to actually bear witness and to see it. So recently, because my daughter, she's a cheerleader, and she does professional cheerleading, and it was a big cheerleader competition, and it was like a bunch of cheerleaders from around the world went to Dallas for the NCAA National Cheerleader thing. And long story short, I was going to book planes, but they gave me like a real long layover. So both of my girls, they was like, "Mine, you might as well cancel the whole tickets, because we'll be at the airport all day." But I'm just like, "Well, at least we'll be safe." But it was like, "Let's drive up." And I'm in my mind like, I ain't never take a road trip that long. But I'm like, okay, well, we can split the drive and do this, even though I don't like to drive on highways. Didn't even realize that trip was going to be like 21 to 24 hours just on the road. But the things that I saw and endured on the road was beyond unreal. Like, you can't make this stuff up. So literally, as we're passing through, we're getting through like different southern states and whatnot, I just, like, literally, I remember my daughter, my youngest, was like, "Mommy, why what's that monkey doing hanging up on that light pole? I'm like, monkey, so that made me, like, look up. But I'm still trying to focus. It was my turn to drive, and my oldest daughter was like, oh, my goodness, did you see what that sign said? So long story short, speeding forward, she pretty much said, the sign said, yeah, because I saw the nigga part, excuse my French, but, you know, I saw that part, but it said, hey, I'm going to say Negroes in replace of the other word, but it said Negroes be gone before the sun goes down. And I'm like, what the hell? I mean, I'm like, why would people literally let this kind of thing? Then my daughter and I started doing research, and it was so grim. And then right in the area where we all know who was in Tennessee, I don't know where we were, but we was in one of those sundown states, and that's when I was like, sundown, like, what the heck, what in the world is a sundown? And then to come to find out, so the sundown states are not just, it's like all a weave, and I found out since we even have some in Maryland. Like, we have them all over, but they're not talked about. Like, people are not talking about, and what's going on, if you don't know what I mean, because I felt like a fool, like, because, you know, I'm like, I never heard of that, or I would have thought something like that existed just only in the 1950s and things of that nature, but it's real. This is like, if you're black or if you're at any other color other than Caucasian and you get caught at a rest stop, you have car issues, you're out on the street, these racist killers can actually come kill you. And now it makes sense why, like, a lot of families, like, with, like, true, because I always watch true crime shows while here, the news where to say, like, a family, this person went missing. Literally, if you're doing that, like, this explains why, to me, like, why a lot of people are going missing when they're traveling on roads. And I was freaked out. Then it's so bad, sis, that we actually got to one rest stop. And I'm like, okay, I'm exhausted, because, like, at different rest stops, you might have to drive 200 miles to almost 400 miles till you get to the next one. And I'm thinking, like, in these states, like, why are they so far apart? Like, what if I have to go to the bathroom? Or what if I need to, like, it was beyond unreal. And then literally when we went into one, like, as you talking about the crack of the sun going down, they actually shut down the daggone, I never heard of something. You're going to shut down a rest stop? They had their little cones, and I was so tempted to ride through them cones, but I'm just like, you still ain't safe, because, you know, if they come to the rest stop and you're just parked there, then I'm in a rental car, and then we kept getting pulled over for no reason. Every time we entered different states for no reason, sis, getting pulled over by Caucasian state troopers on the highway for no reason. They run, and then they not only just taking my daughter, driver's license, they're taking both of us. And I'm like, first of all, why are you taking both of our driver's license when both our names are on the rental? Few people can't drive a car at one time, so what you're doing makes no sense. And the first thing they say, oh, you're from Maryland, and that is like holding us there for like 45 to 50 minutes. And when I say it was unreal, sis, you can't make this stuff up. Then we went to one restaurant, so I'm like, okay, it was Cracker Barrel. And I know how racist they are in our city, but I'm just thinking, like, and it's sad because my daughter's like, please don't let them be racist. But it was like, okay, let's just go in here before we hit the road coming back home. So we go into there, and of course it's a Caucasian female with a country accent. She comes, she has on her Cracker Barrel apron, and she's got a little pen pad in there and the stuff ready to serve type of thing. So she goes, do you guys want a booth or do you want a table? Now on both sides, on the right and left side, they both have booths and tables. So I'm like, sure, we'll take a booth. She put me on the left-hand side, and I noticed that there's three of the black family members, and, like, there's one black man, there was a couple, and there was another. But then all the white people were on her side. She's serving the white people. She actually went in the back, and this lady looked like she had on, like, she was a dishwasher. She came down, didn't know what she was doing, and they got her to serve us. I was like, you can't make this up. It's like, well, no. It's like, I'm being segregated in the restaurant. I'm just like, you cannot make none of this up. And as if this wasn't enough, and this is the last thing I'll say, I'm coming back now. I'm in Nashville. But my heart just was, like, beating. My spiritual mind was saying, oh, my God, something bad is going to happen. I'm trying not to receive it. I'm like, God, Jesus, take the wheel. Like, something like, please, like, don't let nothing happen. I'm just praying for me and my girls. And then I'm thinking in my spirit, I'm like, or maybe you're just so shook up and traumatized. And then I will tell you about what I call road calling. It's been all going the roads that we were on since all you saw was accident, like vehicle crashes, like stuff that's pushed to the side. And they don't even have enough of respect to, like, clean up. Like, you'll see a big fender or somebody here. Like, you'll see a pair of boots where somebody might have got hit by a car. It was just, like, traumatized. So you saw all this cars to me on the side of the road. Nobody's taking it out. So long story short, I saw it. Like, my nerve, I'm sweating. It's my turn to drive again. I'm like, oh, my God, like, something bad is going to happen. So I'm like, let me fill up. My daughter's like, Mom, we're a quarter take away from four. I said, I don't care if that thing's almost too full. We're going to fill this thing up. My spirit's saying, fill this car completely up, and let's go get something to eat before we get on this road. So I'm, like, kind of stalling. And she's like, Mom, we got to hurry up because you know it's going to take our trip. But I said, I don't care. I'm doing what my spirit tells me. So we wind up finding, like, two fast food places to eat, like drive-thrus to grab some food. Then we grab gas. So as soon as I get on the highway, we see all this smoke. Then they pull out to the side and say, road closed. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, how's it? Then they try to detour us. And, like, so we were stuck on this highway in Nashville for, like, 3 to 4 hours, which threw our trip completely off. But I thank God that I filled up because by the time we got off of this highway, they kept saying, reported fire up ahead. So in our mind, we're thinking, oh, well, maybe it's a big tractor trailer, because I literally, since I done rolled past, I done seen tractor trailers turn to the side that flipped over, but I never saw a fire. But I'm seeing all the smoke. Long story short, may the family rest in peace. It was a family that was flying a private airplane that actually crashed into the media strip of the highway we was on because it was trying to land, and it was calling for clearance, and they never gave them clearance because he was having issues with mechanical issues with the plane. And literally by the time they cleared, he was already crashing down. 3 children were killed and 2 adults. And I was like, you can't make this stuff up. So that was like the trip from hell. I'm just like, oh my goodness. So yeah. Yep.
Wow. So you was in some sundown towns.
Sundown towns. I'm talking about some real ones, like to the point, like one of them rest stops we went in, it just sounded like they was playing creepy music, and it was playing like all this stuff, and they kept saying red drum, red drum, and I'm like, hold on, anybody know that's devil worshiping music? Red drum backwards is murder, and I'm like, oh, give me this, like, oh my God, that was like, you cannot make this stuff up, like, literally. You know, I sent you the accident about, I sent you the report about the accident on the plane.
Yeah.
I sent you where we was traveling on the highway. I kept posting it on Facebook. And then it was like, soon as I started talking about all the racism, my account got shut down and everything for hours. But then I was told that there was a glitch going on where a lot of people's social media and stuff was shut down. So I'm just like, you cannot make this stuff up.
Wow.
You can only laugh at the foolishness. But yeah, but it's not funny. But I never knew it was good. The particular town we was in Tennessee, they literally were just talking about a young man that his car had broke down on the side of the road, and he, like, pulled over there waiting for a roadside, and these white racist men pulled up, dragged him out of his car, put them in the back part of his truck, beat him for hours, took him to another part of the highway, beat him for hours, then the government enough, they took their rope, tied it around this young man. He was like in his 30s, tied it around his head and everything, and pulled to the point they grow so fast, his whole head came off. Whole head came off, and then they were just saying, like, you know, they're giving them, like, these little phony charges with nothing to stick, like, and they didn't arrest them immediately. It took them, like, foolishness. And so in my mind, I'm there thinking about, oh, my God, like, everything just hit me, like, but, you know, we're having been in this fight and fighting for accountability, having meeting Ahmaud Arbery's mom, you know, and if anybody don't know who Ahmaud was, Ms. Wanda, that was her son, and pretty much he was just jogging through a neighborhood, and these white racist people in a truck chased him down and literally killed him, and then it took them months to get arrested, and then finally, after everything, you know, was, you know, brought up into the media is when Ahmaud's family got a accountability, but the way that they talked about him during the defense, like calling him black and dirty, and I mean, you talking about the state prosecutor is literally calling a victim because he had dirty skin, and we let him up to no good, like saying this racist stuff, and my mom had to sit back and listen to this foolishness. Like, so I say, you know, they can say all this stuff, this has been abolished, this is gone, but at the end of the day, we still living. This is modern day, and if we don't do something, we all going. It's like history is beyond competing itself, but like with your things that you're doing, so we all need to do it, because at the end of the day, it's our lives, it's our family lives that are on the line, and if we don't do nothing, this racist system is still doing a bunch of stuff, dirty stuff, and we just sitting by like frogs in a pot waiting to die, just adjusting the temperature on us, and we're not hopping out, we just sitting there waiting to die, like, no, it's crazy.
Absolutely. All right, family, listen, if you have a question or a comment for Sister Tawanda, you know, you can use your gesture on Zoom. And those who are on our blog, you can just press 1, and I can see you on our blog. And those who are in the Zoom, you can use your hand gesture if you want to ask Sister Tawanda. Okay, yep. Okay, our General Janae Cook got a question or a comment for you. Go ahead, Sister Janae.
Hello, Sister Tawanda. I'm listening to your story, and I'm sitting here, and I'm like, she is so right. She's so right. I just recently came from Washington, D.C., well, literally from New Jersey to New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? On the back roads, avoiding the highways.
Mm-hmm.
And when I tell you we saw some stuff that I could not even fathom would still happen in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
We had to come through the Smoky Mountains in Tennessee. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was asked, so I know you're not lying.
Hey, I was so scared. I was scared. First of all, it was smoking for real. It was on fire.
Yeah, real smoky. Yeah.
Smoking mountains. On fire, literally. And then we stopped at the gas station. Like you said, we stopped it, and I was like, I don't want to stop till I get to South Carolina, because I just want to go on to see my kids and stuff on the way. And we stopped at that gas station, and I thought they had blocked us off, getting gas from leaving the gas station. We walked in there, and we were like, you know, they were looking like, where y'all from? You know, like, and I'm from the South. I'm from South Carolina now, so I know what a sundown town is, but you can't live around the corner from one. We weren't allowed to go in their neighborhoods at all, because you might not make it back out.
Right.
Of our black brothers getting burned alive, walking down the street. This is really happening. That's part of what fueled my revolution, because I'm like, y'all don't even see what's going on. Like, nobody
at all
to what they're doing to our people. They ain't never stopped hanging black people.
Right.
I saw a black man being hung outside my bedroom window.
Oh, my God.
Spartanburg, South Carolina, right there.
Wow.
They know what about Spartanburg. And they said down there, the sheriff there, Chuck Wright, is still the sheriff. He told them when he said, we don't just kill niggas in South Carolina, in Spartanburg, South Carolina. We kill white folks, too.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You haven't quoted that and said it. Y'all better be serious about your walking in these places that you ain't never been in before, and you don't know where you're going. You don't know nobody. This is why our network is so important with this Million Woman World March.
Yeah.
And that when you go to another city, that you have a sister or a brother that you can call on to make sure you arrive safely, or you got a stopping point you can get to and take a break and have a rest. You know, they had that green book for no reason back in the day.
and to make sure that you could travel safely. We are not safe in this country.
At all. At all.
So I'm in Washington, D.C., and if you're not doing it, if you're here anytime, like we're having a brunch tomorrow, and we also, the brunch is Sunday. We're going to be trying to do it like every other Sunday or every Sunday if we can. You know, I co-managed the building. So we can open it up every Sunday. But if you're in D.C. and you're in the DMV area on a Sunday, just call me or whatever, and we'll schedule a brunch. We can go down and politic and network and make sure that we get our people safe, because we got to go.
And that's the truth, sis. I'm just so glad that you, like, because when I say I thought I was trapped in a nightmare movie, like, and I felt so bad because I'm like, here I am, like, just riding around. I'm not in a murder car. Yes, like, I'm not in a murder car. I done lost my mind. And then I got, like, a real nice rental car. It was like a 24 charge. It was a Dodge 24, and it kept on. It was a pretty turquoise blue with rims on it, man. They kept pulling us over. Then I'm like, I'm not in my car because I drive a Benz, but I got 10 in the rental, so I could see, you know, and they can't see me, but they could see us crystal clear. Me and my girls, no man, nobody, just us. When I say, oh, my God, I felt so vulnerable, I felt like, I felt rage. I'm like, why don't nobody tell me about this sun downtown? Then when I posted on Facebook, he's like, oh, yeah, girl, you ain't know I'm LOL. I'm like, ain't nothing to LOL about. I could have freaking lost my life and don't even know anything about it.
Right.
Like, it's not that he laughs, but they're just entertaining. It's not. And then you got these white people that's really prejudiced people that are purging. And then they even take big dog animals, like all type of big German shepherd pitbulls. And they'll let the dogs eat you up if they catch you at these roadside. And it was so weird because I said this. It was so weird because when I was getting ready to get out, my dad said, I was pissing myself, cheating my legs before I get out, because it was, I seen two white people, they had five big ass dogs, cheating my legs. It made me so mad. And they was like, just waiting for them. I'm like, oh, my dad was like, mine ain't gonna sell that, no. And then sure enough, when I grew, that's another way that they let the dogs attack you and do all type of stuff to you. I'm like, oh, how do these dogs look like? They like Cujo, the movie back in the day. I ain't never seen no dogs that big, bigger than a daggone car. And y'all just a big tall white man and a big tall white woman just standing at the rest stop watching. And I'm like, I get up and but it was just like, I could see the dog. I might be blind, but I could spot an animal in the dark, pitch black. I'm like, oh, I know there ain't no dog. Like, I'm like, oh, heck no. Then I turn back around.
Wow.
But it's real,
sir. And Sister Tawanda, point of clarity, you got stopped how many times?
Go ahead. Exactly. It was three times, three different states. Every time we earn it, and then it's so weird because what they'll do, they'll have these prejudiced state troopers, like right at the point. Like, so I learned so much about the highway because, like, literally, you could be on one highway to the state, it's 75 miles. So you're doing that, and then. Then if you get to the other point, the other one might be 65 miles, and then that's when you'll have them come pull you over. Like, oh, like, what? Like, it just changed. Like, what is that? Like, I'm just like, is it just changing on my GPS in the car? Like, it just changed. Like, is that, like, we got one big ticket for no reason, almost $500 or $600. And I'm like, the thing just literally changed. And I was like, wow. But then the interesting part, and they're talking moving forward to West Wednesday. And they said that's why I'm glad that I deal with, like, all type of races that support West Wednesday. So we did our demonstration this week. We had, like, protesters, like, following us, like, marching behind us and things of that nature. And I was in my white brother's car with white people. Do you know, I had no idea that they was going to ride up a one-way street. A one-way street with oncoming traffic. I got the mic up. I'm playing. I'm asking that off. Like, we got the music playing. After the police, and I'm just having the time of my life. And I'm like, okay, y'all killed my brother for talking about he was driving too slow towards the stop sign. But do you know, because I had a white driver and white people in the car with me, they didn't do anything. I mean, they chased us, a high-speed chase, so I'm shook up, so I'm like, oh, my God, I ain't never been locked up in my life. I'm going to jail today because I'm all out. But I'm like, okay, this worth it. I don't care. But I just didn't even do nothing. They just started, like being smart, clapping their hands for me. And I was like, you know what? It's sad that, you know, white privilege is real. You know what I mean? It's just sad and disgusting.
Yeah.
Sad and disgusting. Because I'm in my mind thinking, what if I would have gotten Shorty truck and Shorty would have took Lombard Street the wrong way and Baltimore Street the wrong way? We'd have been locked up for reckless driving and all this foolishness.
Right.
I'm just like, it's this unreal of stuff we see and that we sat back and just like, okay, it's not okay. It's not, like, I'm very disturbed. It's not okay. And then I'm glad the sister said she was from D.C., so I just heard the mayor from D.C., the black mayor, is trying to get black people killed there in D.C. She just signed an executive order for pretty much high-speed chases are now okay, that they can chase down because they're trying to get Baltimore running the stop. Our mayor to follow the same thing, but then he had the nerve to let his commissioner say, now we pretty much going back to the zero stop and frisk, which they got rid of because they said so many black folks were getting killed. And because that was under the administration that when my brother got killed, they just kill him over for anything, for saying it for a traffic stop, and then you could search the car illegally, all this foolishness. But they just announced that the same day, and that was on Monday, when a black man turned on, when I say those white folks, them state troopers that were behind her and the commissioner that was right there with her, they looked like they was in a purge movie, like they were smiling. She's like, yeah, because we know that, I know that high-speed chases are, you know, not good, but at the same time, the police need to do their job, and I'm going to allow them to do their job. I'm like, you want to allow them to chase, and you know they're going to chase the black folks. And that's why a lot of people get killed in these high-speed chases. So she just signed an executive order to let them do their thing. And then our commissioner, Worthless Woolley here, had just put in something to say that now that the police can pull us over. Now, mind you, a marijuana, 3-3 and everything, but now they can pull you over, search your car, then they can pull you over if you're driving fast. If you're driving fast, they can actually pull you over and search your car if you're driving fast. I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
So let me do a little sidebar real quick, because every now and then we have to throw in Poli-Sci 101 for black folks, all right? And that's political science 101 for black folks. So let me tell you, for those who do not know, again, we talked earlier about politics and, you know, different dynamics with that. Well, a lot of folks do not realize that these parties, and what I mean by that is, and not just from the celebratory standpoint, these are organized, I was going to say organized crime, but that too, but these are organized modes of operations. And so what most don't understand is they think they're looking at a mayor or city council person or whatever, but particularly people in the head of stuff, mayors, you know, senators and things like that, but particularly mayors. So let me tell you how this stuff works. If you notice, New York, Chicago, Philly now, Baltimore, and D.C., they all have black mayors. So isn't it interesting that a lot of the policies are all the same now? So my point is, see, what we don't understand, many folks don't understand about politics and how it actually works, or I'm going to say works, how they actually do it. They have different sessions, meetings, conventions. Like they've got the big convention coming up in July. That's going to be in Detroit. And we plan to be up there, by the way. But the point is they have regional meetings. Right? Now, how do people think this stuff happens, that these various mayors start coming up with legislation or proposals or whatever? A lot of that stuff is not what they came up with. That stuff, they have meetings all year long. And then they will make a determination based on their party politics, what they're going to do in the cities that they control. And so,
And so
particularly for the Democratic Party, to stop at this thing, so we just got a new mayor here in Philly, and that's one of the first things that she said, that she was going to reinstitute, because Nutter, by the way, he was the mayor a few years back. He was the one that was famous for it. And then it later on died down a little bit. So she's talking about bringing it back and increasing police and, you know, this whole other thing. So my point is, when you examine, again, I gave you five cities that we've looked at carefully, Baltimore, D.C., Philly, I forgot Newark, New Jersey. Yep, Sister Manier is in the house. Newark, New Jersey. My point is, these are all Democrats. Right? And so the illusion is, speaking of illusion, isn't it interesting that it looks like folks are going to have to pick from between Biden and Trump? what a game that is. That is a, I digress. Oh, my gosh. But the point is that I'm trying to make is we have to become a lot more savvy about understanding, overstanding how this stuff actually works. What did Dr. Francis Questuelsi and Baba Neely Fuller say? If you do not understand the system of white supremacy, everything else will only confuse you. Mm. And I'm saying most folks do not understand how this stuff operates, how the police commissioner to the mayor, and all of that is connected to the party. So whatever mandates the party has for that city, that's what that represented. That's what that official is going to do based on what the party has decided. This is how this stuff works. So, again, gentrification, that's why in all of these cities, gentrification is high, very high. That's because these black mayors, they're put in place to make deals with the corporations, the developers, the colleges, the universities, and most of these cities, the universities are taking over black communities.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? I mean, and the corporations. So my point is, we got to pay closer attention to how this stuff really what's really going on. And that you can believe we ain't winning none of that. I mean, see, we'll get something out of it, but in the big scheme of things, we ain't getting none of that. Ever. It's not designed for us. So again, I tell people, you know, get what you can. That's what we need to do. We need to get what we can with this, because the illusion of inclusion and it really working for us, if you don't know that by 250 years by now, guess what? Reconstruction was destruction.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we really think, this is why these people running around here talking about justice and all of this, if they just talking and marching and they don't have a backup, they don't have a plan of action, that ain't got nothing to do with this stuff, they wasting y'all's time.
That's the truth.
You know,
amen.
We got to deal with self-determination, our own everything at some point. And again, you got two hands, therefore I'm not saying to eliminate, you know, one side of it. I'm not saying that. I'm saying we just better start using the other part of that a little more, right?
Yeah.
But this is, see, again, Sister Tawana, and I know it was a bitter lesson, but you cannot be an activist in this country. And what I mean by activist, you cannot be one that advocates for our people and think you're ever safe. Ever. Don't believe it. Don't believe it. Yeah, I mean.
Since I wanted to ask who I had out there for West Wednesday this week. So if people are not familiar, I had the cousin William Green, who was pretty much executed. Because we have to call these things out. He was executed in Prince George's County in 2019, and literally this is what happened. He got into a car accident. Now, mind you, like, he didn't kill nobody. It was just a regular fender bender type of accident type of thing. The police officer
take some, you know, out my these days, because I think he hit like a park car. I think he crashed into a park car or something. But to make a long story short, they took him out these kind of days, and they put, they got him handcuffed behind his back, and they put him in the police officer's up front car. He's in the, you know, the patrol car, passenger up front, not in a paddy wagon, up front, hands behind his back type of thing. Do you know that this murderous killer cop that murdered two other people and punched George's County blew freaking William Green away, murdered him. Talking about he feared for his life, he was doing some type of, now mind you, they done chased him down, patted him down, no weapons, none of that, before they put him in a patrol car, and you blow his brains away. The same way that they did Archie Elliott, which I protest week after week with Miss Dodd, and she's been protesting now for 32 years. Like, this is ridiculous. And I always say, I don't want to be Miss Dodd, but Archie Elliott, pretty much they claim he had no shoulder on Archie Elliott. They claim he was alleviated, and the officer put him up front in his patrol car. This is the same thing that I say these sundown damn towns that just say, we can do whatever we want to do to a Negro, we can do that and get slammed away with it. And then, mind you, Archie Elliott's mom at the time, she was like a prominent figure in her community. I forgot her job title, but I know that her husband or somebody in her family pretty much was a judge. And you go and you execute their son like that, and nobody gets charged, and then you turn right around with James Reed. We're talking about decades later in Prince George's County. All these in Prince George's County is a sundown town. Like, it really is a sundown town. And I started, you know, because once I get in, start my eyes opening, you can't unsee what you saw. You know what I mean? So now I'm doing research and where's all these sundown towns that here in Maryland and things of that nature. But yes, definitely PG County, known for it. But I had her there, and then the crazy part, she was able to get to prepare a jury trial and everything, but the crazy part, the way they did it was terrible. They made it so that this would be violent because they couldn't, they did not let the jurors know that he already done killed two other black men, and they left off, and now they're holding him in the federal jail for like some foolishness, not for none of the bodies. And they get them, you know, promotions and qualified immunity and all this foolishness, but he pretty much is dead. But once, like I said, it goes down to this capital system, once he's been there for like overtime, fraud, jail, and fraud, foolishness. But I couldn't believe they found this man, this animal, this piece of trash, not guilty. James Wayne. I'm sorry, William Wayne. William Wayne. A man, a black man in handcuffs, full car accident, talking about he said that he had to use the bathroom and then he got combative. I'm like, you better not pee in here. And then he said, well, if I feel like it, I might. And then he blew his brains out, but that's that. You better obey me, you Negro. I don't want to say that word, but that's that same man's mentality that's been going on, and then we think we're free. We think we're free.
Wow.
Disgusting.
Well, hold on there, Sister Tawanda. We got Sister Manira, Brother Ray Ray. I'm coming at you in a few minutes. I'm going to go to one of our blog first, and then I'm coming to Sister Manira and Brother Ray Ray. Blog, you are at 7090. We're going to come to you. And your mic is now open.
Peace and love. This is Sister Nikki.
Hey, Sister Nikki.
Hi. I was listening in, and I also thought, you know, what is it? Harriet Tubman, number one. Fannie Lou Hamer. With the same, oh, my goodness. I'm trying to think. Her home, you just said, is literally, I want to say, 5 miles from Harriet Tubman's in upstate New York. And Frances Quest Wilson would be my next, but those are my four sisters
okay.
that I think. And when we mentioned Fannie Lou Hamer, was she unhealthy after she was beaten with a prod, you know, cattle prod. You know, it caused her blindness in one eye. It caused urinary tract. It caused so many, you know, she ended up with a limp for the rest of her days.
Yeah, we played two. You must have been just coming on because we did two. We did Fanny Lou Hamer's like two speeches from her where she talked about that.
Right. You know, so you had talked about her health, and I was like, well,
right.
Due to what had that beating caused her health problems and for her to have died early. So it was a good
mm-hmm.
thing she didn't spend that house that they shot up, you know.
Right, right.
When she come back. And Harriet being hit with that, what is it, shoe horn, that metal, you know, besides causing a possible fracture in her head,
right.
a lot of her vision and so forth, and her mother or father being Native American, you know, and the other African. So she had not only the knowledge of roots and so forth to heal. She was known as, I would say, as Dr. Mack would say, a doctor. You know, we called her nurse and spy, but for her to
okay.
know to use ice and so forth for the soldiers, because two-thirds of them died during the war because of malaria.
Right. Okay,
listen,
we got to kind of move. I thought you had a question or comment
right.
for Sister Tawanda.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, sisters. Peace and love. Thank you.
No, I thought, because we got to move on. We only got about 15 minutes left. We still got to bring Brother Ray Ray in.
Right.
But, okay. But did you have a question or comment for Sister Tawanda?
No. Yeah. Right. I was just going to end that, you know, if anyone slips on a banana peel, as Khalid Muhammad would say, you know
right.
we did it. All right.
Yeah, you got that right. Thank you, sister. All right. Brother Ray Ray, come on in.
Well, okay. Thank you, Sister Pillay. Sister Tawana, those those weightlifting meals or something else. This fight you're doing. This was down in. You drove from north to Tennessee.
No, I drove all the way from Baltimore.
Baltimore to Tennessee for a talent search?
Yeah, for my daughter, because my daughter does professional cheer, so I drove from Baltimore to Dallas, Texas for a cheer, and we had to go through, like, all these other different states. Like, yeah, it took us 20 or 40 bands.
So was it anybody else from Baltimore or –
Yeah, so the thing was, like, a lot of people took planes and things of that nature, like, you know, the airplane. So we just drove up. And then the crazy part, like, the gym that my daughter goes to is, like, predominantly Caucasian folks. So, you know, they got money and things of that nature. So they already had booked their stuff because, like, we actually got to go back this weekend coming up. We're going to Ocean City and then turn right around next month. We got for the final competition, we got to fly out to Florida Disney World.
So, look, down in Hingham High, Tennessee, they didn't have, like, a group thing where everybody could go or was individual?
What was it like? You know, so the thing is, with her cheer thing, because these white folks got money and I felt they don't, like, so the thing is, they had us for, like, once we got to Dallas, Texas, we had to go to the hotel that they wanted us to go to with all the cheerleaders that came from around the world, but we had to pay, like, $285 a night, and we had to pay for everything. Literally, we had to pay to get in to see her compete. We got to pay, like, $100 just for, like, a wristband to see her compete 2 days because it was a two-day competition. There's always 2 days, so you got to pay that. So that but they don't have like the group thing that you will probably see like in most teams that you could do, but no, It's just like everything. And then, mind you, it's like $875 a month just to use the gym. That's just the gym for them to teach them the stunts. That ain't the $2,000 for the uniform. That ain't the $500 for the practice wear. That ain't the $200 for the bullets. That's nothing. Like highway robbery.
And then you got to go through all that going down. And so I'm glad you made it through. But I would definitely think very strategically if you have to go back down there. That happened.
Oh, yeah, no, that'll never happen that long ride.
It happened to me in going to Detroit in Ohio.
Oh, my God.
It happened to me coming back from Detroit in the belt broke and I had my tapes in my car, my history tapes. And when I called the tow guy, the guy saw the history tapes and he took me to, me and my, God bless him, Amar, to a Klan only town, Pennsylvania. And, you know, they disrespected me in front of my son.
Oh, wow.
And I felt so bad, and my son said, "Dad, I'm glad you didn't say nothing." You know, and this Mexican guy said, they said, "Well, y'all gonna get a room?" The Mexican guy said, "My friend, there's a van coming here in about an hour. I think you should be showing that van." And then it took us to the George Washington Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
After the guy fixed my van, me and my son had to go back out there, and I'm a 12-stepper, so I told the white boy, I said, "Listen, you better be glad I'm a member of a program, because there will have been some bloodshed." And
mm-hmm.
That's going on. I really can't see how people think that this country is going to give us some fucking reparations.
Exactly.
This happened to me in Ohio. I let the whole world know how my past was.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep the meeting list and everything in my car window. And the police still came with the dogs, and he waited for under the speed limit and pulled me over. They pulled dogs. And I didn't give the guy no problem. I said, "Listen, you can do whatever you want. I'm out in the middle of the Ohio Turnpike.
Wow.
I'm not going to be talking no stuff."
So
with all what you just said, I'm glad, you know, nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
But do you really think these people are going to give us some goddamn reparation?
Mm-hmm.
The way they hate and hear you with your tone.
Yeah. All right, so, Brother Ray Ray.
You made it out of there, and I would think twice.
Oh, no, they ain't got one about me never ever again. I don't care. Like,
Well, because down in them southern states, they have it. And everybody is moving down south.
Mm. Yeah, that's crazy.
All right, my brother. We got to get one more in. Sister Manira, are you ready now? I think you had a question or comment.
Well, yeah, just a comment. Mm-hmm. And just want to say greetings to Sister Tawana. Great hearing your voice again, sister, always moving to the ground, doing the work, you know, while freedom fighters and freedom fighting ancestors. Well, you know, I done traveled, like, across the United KKK, whatever, and because I'm a trucker, and I done been places where, oh, my God. You know, I just wish and hope and pray that trucks don't break down, and had episodes while working. My president general, I know you remember when I had to sue a company because in this KKK town right in New Jersey, which is called Booton. And we have a lot of Klan towns here, sundown towns right here in the city in New Jersey. And I went to make a delivery and was going to bring the stuff to the person's door. But they opened up their garage and told me to bring the packages to the back in the garage through their back door. And lo and behold, when I got to the back door of the steps going, you know, into the back of the back door, which is through the garage, big two-wit dogs come running out. I had to run for my life, and they literally had these dogs out and loose. And I'm out. Do you remember President General when I sued the company?
Yeah, I remember.
And I'm like, I literally, like, ran for my life, got injured, sued the homeowner as well as the company that I was working for. And, I mean, I've been in some towns right here in New Jersey as well as across the USA where the Klans is real out there. We definitely have to be mindful. When I used to travel, I used to bring my little Cimarron to work because I got a little one. I mean, carry it around and be safe out there. So, and that's for all of us because, you know, the sundown town right here in our own backyard as well as in the United States is real, and we have to protect ourselves.
That's right.
So, give thanks that you had the intuition, you know, to sense danger. And we always got to be mindful and stay on alert wherever we are, you know, because you don't only have the slave catchers, the Klan, the sundown towns, but the Negropeans is down with them.
That's right.
Yeah. Some of them are just as racist as, you know, as the Klan.
They surely do. Thank you for that, my friend. Definitely.
Be safe, stay safe, and peace and love.
Thank you.
Thank
you, Sister Manira. All right, family, listen, we're going to close out in a few moments. We're going to have Sister Tawanda give us her closing comments, and then we're going to close out with Mumia Abu-Jamal. We got his latest commentary. Of course, next month we're gearing up for Mumia's Earth Day. He will be 70 years of age and, of course, has served more than 40 years of incarceration. So we have some plans that we're going to be introducing to, you know, at least on our end to create more visibility, more action to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. So before we hear from Mumia to close out, we're going to go to Sister Tawanda's closing comments.
Yeah, thank you. So just like with that road trip, and it was unfortunately, I could not stop, like, to go to sleep Wednesday. Me and my daughter took, you know, turns, driving nonstop. It's just no, only time we'll stop at a rest stop is to go to the bathroom. But my whole point is, we have to keep this thing moving. We have to fight together, you know, and it's instead of us fighting each other, we have to fight together. We have to support our queen, our one and only Empress Chi, Dr. Empress Chi, so Doc on that, because she is having ideas and ways, and with this powerful network, bringing us together, putting knowledge in our head. This is what we're going to do with the knowledge. We have to do something, shutting around, waiting, you know, like a frog in a pot. No, I'm hopping out. So live to love, love to live. I love you all.
Oh, thank you, my sister. All right, family, listen, we're going to close this session out. We thank everyone for tuning in, those who are on the blog. Thank you, as usual. Next month, we celebrate 15 straight years, y'all. Next month. So we're going to really, really do some wonderful things for next month and moving forward. Also, of course, want to thank everyone that joined us on Zoom. And, of course, those who are listening virtually that we can't see you, and that's okay. I think Sister Keisha was out there for a minute. She texted me. So there's a lot of folks listening that y'all can't see, but it's all good because we're connecting those black dots. All right, so tomorrow, family, 6 o'clock, we'll be doing a Zoom. For those who are involved in either the Million Woman Party, the Million Woman Ministries, the Commission on the Status of Women, and also, of course, the African Women's United Nations. Tomorrow's session is going to cover the next steps for those groups, for those components, and get us ready for Tuesday. We are expecting a few media people so that we can get on the record that we're putting out a demand or a call to black women in particular during this Women's History Month to show some love, support, et cetera, for the women and girls in Haiti, Congo, and, of course, the Sudan, where we're getting a lot of reports of what's going on with our women there, and nobody's hardly saying anything about that. It's all about Gaza, Palestine, and so forth, which is fine, but, hey, you know what? Again, hashtag just us. What about us? All right. So, at any rate, family, we thank you all again. And we're going to close out with Mumia Abdul-Jamal. And we're saying free Mumia and all of our political prisoners. They shouldn't have served any of that, period, but definitely 40-plus years. And absolutely cannot allow that any longer. So, again, we're going to close out with Mumia Abdul-Jamal. And here we go. Oops.
Gwen gets a win. Daniel Gwen, a death row prisoner for almost 30 years, is now leaving death row and prison itself after his case was finally dismissed after the case fell apart. For almost 30 years, Gwen was subject to decades of solitary confinement, under threat of imminent death and soul-aching loneliness. Gwen's conviction stems from both a false confession and apparently tampering with witnesses by police and the prosecutor. He was charged and convicted of murder, arson, and aggravated assault, and the death of Marcia Smith of a 4,500 block of Chestnut Street in West Philadelphia in November 1994. The woman died from smoke inhalation, and several others were injured after jumping out of a three-story window. Gwen was charged with setting a fire. Why was the confession suspect? Because Gwen, then in his 20s, was a serious drug fiend. His so-called confession was quite divergent from the facts at issue. How did he survive almost 30 years on death row with his sanity intact? Art. Specifically, he learned how to paint, and he made stunning works of art. When I was on death row at SCI Green, the prison aired shots of artworks on its closed-circuit TV channel. I remember seeing a memorable painting of a jazz pianist deep into his music. The keyboard undulated like a wave, seemingly dancing to the music. That work of beauty was painted by Daniel Gwen. Gwen, now 54 years old, is now really free. With love, not fear, this is Mumia Abdul-Jamal. These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
All right, family. Again, that was Mumia Abdul-Jamal's latest commentary. As you know, he is recording it via telephone, via the prison that he's in. so that's why sometimes you hear a lot of, you know, sounds in the background, because he's literally recording it from prison. And as you can tell, Mumia rarely talks about himself. Usually when he reports, he's talking about someone else. He's talking about supporting someone else or giving you information about someone else. This is why we've got to step up for him. We've got to, he was known as the voice of the voiceless. Well, we've got to now be his voice. So starting in April, we're going to step it up to free Mumia Abu-Jamal. 40-plus years is far too long, and Mumia must come home now. He is having a lot of health issues. You can't tell when you hear his voice because he's just that professional that he's always been as a top journalist, and so he continues to be able to sound in that manner. But his physical body is going through a lot right now, and so he needs to get out of there. So we'll talk more about that next week, family. Again, tomorrow at 6 o'clock, we'll be sending out the Zoom link very shortly. Again, those who are really interested, because we're not playing around now, not that we ever were, but this is now serious stuff that we're doing, talking about, and getting ready for. Again, those who are interested in the Saint Harriet Tubman installment, the Fannie Lou Hamer, St. Fannie Lou Hamer installment projects, those are two that are now underway. And so we'll be talking a little bit about that tomorrow, but also we're going to talk about there's some other aspects of St. Fannie Lou Hamer, because we want to do the Fannie Lou Hamer farms, because her history is connected to farming, to land, to cooperative farming. So again, our position is, how are we honoring our ancestors? How are we continuing their work? So again, we're going to highlight some of the things that we're looking at doing as we bring forward the Million Woman World March. It's solution-oriented. It is proactive. The other thing we're going to talk about tomorrow, family, again, is what can Black women do here in the U.S. in support of our women and girls in Sudan, Congo, and Haiti. Now, of course, again, we have major projects for the U.S. We'll be telling you more about that as we proceed leading up to May, when we launch a national campaign that deals specifically with our women and girls here. Oh, and by the way, let me read this to you, because this is getting ready to be released as well. So lately, and for those who missed today, shame on you, because we're talking about the codes of conduct for Black women. We're literally developing codes of conduct so that our women can begin to at least have something to examine, something to embrace in terms of how we're going to deal with behavior or changing some of our behaviors. Well, along with that, along with the know thyself and other what we call rights of passage, we now have some other things that we're getting ready to introduce. And on March the 31st, we're going to announce it officially. So with that said, are y'all ready for this? I'm going to give you a little sneak preview. On March the 31st, we will be doing a Zoom live at Astaris Set, which is the location that we've been doing our monthly events at. But check this out. We're going to announce two important, I won't say programs, initiatives that will be a part of the Million Woman World March. For example, the Universal African High Frequency and Fusion Fashion, Wearable Art, and Accessory Showcases. So when the Million Woman World March goes on tour, one of the things we'll be doing is making certain that we're connecting to artists in the fashion and what we call wearable art and accessories, so that come October, we'll have a major presentation of our people who are in the fashion or, again, wearable art and so forth. Now, that's going to be an ongoing component, not only for revenue streaming, but also to make sure that we're highlighting some of the great work, artistry, et cetera, of our people. The other thing that we're going to be introducing on March the 31st. Now, again, this goes back to what we've been doing with our women recently and talking about how do we look at ourselves? What do we think of ourselves? What are we calling beauty? Or what is the ideas and the concept that we feel should be representing Black women, African women? So with that said, come the 31st, we will announce what we call the Naturally Black, Brilliant, and Beautiful Showcase, so that our women can now participate in something where they can exemplify Black beauty, brilliancy, etc. And so that's going to be in every city that we're able to have it in during the next year. Now, again, when we go on tour, we'll be promoting this, and those that are interested will be able to be a part of the showcase for the Million Woman World March. And those who actually are selected, they will be able to go with us to Africa. So when we say naturally beautiful, naturally Black, naturally brilliant, I think that speaks for itself. So we'll be telling you more about that on the 31st. So again, we're solution-oriented. When we talk about the problems, the imagery that we're seeing, that our young girls are seeing, wouldn't it behoove us to represent and present our own? Absolutely. And that's what we're going to do. So stay tuned, y'all. There's much, much more to come. All right, family, listen, we're going to close out now. And again, we thank you all for tuning in to this segment of New Day. We'll touch base with you tomorrow at 6 and, of course, next Saturday, 10:30 p.m., our regular time. I want to thank Dr. Truth Bay for being with us, sharing with us the information about what's going on up at the United Nations this past week. And, of course, her commentary on IET. This very important family, it is because for those who don't know the history, IET was the first when it comes to fighting for liberation and freedom. And so it behooves us to embrace that and to honor that. And so, again, if nothing else, you know, to do whatever parts we can do at this point. I mean, there's not a whole lot we can do right now, but again, we're going to find out whatever it is we can do and do that, particularly our women. So, okay, family, again, I thank you all and have a blessed, blessed, blessed day, weekend, and see you next week. Moja to the Shinda. Peace out.
Hey, everybody.
All right. Hey, Tanisha.
to the people.
I see y'all tomorrow. Peace, Mother May May. Ashe.
Okay. Good night.
Blessings.